Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. We're going to talk some NASCAR. And as if you need, when you say that, and we got Rod Mullins on the line with us here. Usually it's fun anyway, but man, that Martinsville race and what the some of the stuff that transpired. Rod, we always trade notes when we're getting ready to do one of these podcasts. And the first line in your notes, the aftermath of Martinsville. It sounds like there was like a military battle because we know what we're getting ready to talk about here. But so you start with the aftermath of Martinsville. Where do you even want to start with everything that happened this weekend?
Oh, my gosh. It's just I don't even know where to begin with so many storylines in this whole thing. But, you know, I mean, we have to begin with Martin Truex Jr. just dominating this race pretty much from the get-go all the way down to the finish. One of the things that I was surprised with, that he actually dominated as much as he did this past weekend. That was one big surprise. The second big surprise that happened, I figured, okay, well, the Hendrick teams will have some good luck while they're there. They always have some good luck while they're at Martinsville. William Byron was the one that really benefited more than anybody else. He had a chance to possibly win the race, but he just didn't have enough horsepower to be able to get around Martin Truex. But at least Hendrick did finish, you know, there in the top five. One car did. The other problem was Jimmy Johnson. He was running well at one point. He got caught up in a wreck. Then Chase Elliott has the rear end explode. I think it was back in there toward the differential, and he loses the rear end of the car, and he gets behind in some laps. And so if you thought Chase Elliott had a chance at winning that race, that pretty much went out the window. It put him further behind in the points race, or at least one of those positions to get in there. Martin Truex now has one of the four positions. There's three left, and so they now have Texas, they have Phoenix, and then they're going to have Homestead, and that's what's going to be left. So, you know, somebody's going to get in there toward the final end. But, you know, there was so much, I don't know, tension. There was so much jockeying for position. I know one thing that was always that was being said by a couple of the drivers on Sunday was the fact that they could get right up on somebody and have the car, then suddenly they didn't have the power. They get out of the air for that matter and they lose it and they wouldn't be able to get around the car. And Truex was one of those that was able to get out in front, but some of the other cars just weren't that lucky to be able to get around through there. And we can't really end this without not talking about Kyle Busch and Eric Almirola, and also our favorites of the day, Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano for, I don't know, round two, round three, whatever it is right now. But it's getting pretty interesting now as we start closing in on the Texas race this weekend.
Yeah, let's go. Let's talk a little bit more about that Logano-Hamlin. I like the way you put it in the notes, the punch and run of Joey Logano. So these are like chapters in a serial here, it seems like. But, you know, I just refreshed my memory before we hit record. I watched the little back and forth there and the tackle. That was a nice spear by one of the crew members. So talk about that and then the aftermath. I mean, you know, the word aftermath popping up again. But what repercussions there may be given the back and forth there?
Well, I can tell you immediately right off the top of the bat, NASCAR has suspended the Joey Logano team member. I think he was a tire changer or something, tire engineer, something to do with Penske in regard to the tires that they use. He has been suspended for the race coming up at Texas. One race he's been suspended. Now, some of the other pundits have been on television. They've been also on podcasts. And they have really made a big deal that they think he ought to be suspended a lot longer because of the way that, quote unquote, he horse collared him or he manhandled him or however he grabbed a hold of him. All I could see on the video is he grabs Denny Hamlin from the back in his fire suit and he kind of just whips him around and down goes Denny Hamlin. Somebody else falls on top of Denny Hamlin. And then the rush is on. They have other people jumping on him while they're jumping on other people, and it's just mass pandemonium there. But we already know he's going to serve a punishment out of it. Now, as for Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano, nothing has been said right now at this point. I think Steve O'Donnell with NASCAR was pretty blunt to the point when he said, we can't tolerate things like this involving the teams. And I know that there's that rule that have at it, boys. That's what they did out there on the track. And just to refresh everybody's memory as to what happened, I'm just going to put it plain and simple. Joey Logano was up against the wall at Martinsville, and here come Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin squeezed him. He put him up against the wall. It's just a classic short track move. And people can say whatever they want to defending Joey Logano. But real estate is at a prime commodity when you're at Martinsville. You are struggling to try to hold on to every bit of real estate that you can. Chase Elliott put it on Instagram, I think, and he said it almost in the same way. He said, you know, it's short track racing, and that's what it's supposed to be. But I kind of responded to Chase Elliott, and Chase liked one of my comments, or liked my comment, when I used the term punch and run. Because that's what Joey Logano essentially did to Denny Hamlin. He punched him, so to speak. You could hear the slap of the fire suit. And then he commences to walking off. And Joey Logano is notorious for doing things like this. He goes in, he's a lot of mouth, and he talks a good talk. And then he usually just makes a push or he says something and then lets everybody else come in. He's let his dad even come in on a couple of fights before just to be able to, have the old man stand in for him. But Denny Hamlin was not about to have any of it. And so all this pandemonium happened in the pits. I don't really think there's going to be anything that NASCAR is going to do about it, but you better watch out for Texas. It could get a little bit more interesting with Texas. Definitely will get interesting when they get to Phoenix, if it's not solved by the time they get to Texas. But I really think that the best line that came out of this whole thing was the Eric Almirola comment that he had to Kyle Busch, especially after the race was pretty much over with for him on Sunday.
Yeah. Here's the line, and it's, we've got three more weeks, and I'm gonna make it hell for him. those are pretty good. Those are fighting words to say the least. I wonder about possible repercussions just for those words. But of course, Kyle Busch is in the thick of this right now. He finished 14th in the race after the contact with Almirola kind of put him behind the eight ball. Tell us about this and, where things might go from here between those two.
Hey, I almost thought it was Halloween. I almost thought that Almirola was in a Randy Macho Man Savage outfit or something. You know, I kind of closed my eyes and he makes a comment like this and he says, you know, there's three more races and I'm going to make it hell for him. And that's what he said. NASCAR's not going to say anything about it, but I think when it does come to Texas, they will be watching to see what's going to transpire between the two. And if it does get to the point of where it's a little bit something too close for comfort, NASCAR will probably get both of them or bring them in or at least penalize somebody for the whole thing. But Kyle Busch just acts like he's not really worried about it. He's not talking about it. And I think Kyle Busch has had, to me, I think he has had this nonchalant kind of laissez-faire, so to speak, attitude coming into the playoffs. It's like, I'm going to be around. I don't think there's going to be any problem. And that's kind of the way he was acting on Sunday after the race at Martinsville. When somebody asked him about Almirola, he just kind of brushed it off. He doesn't think anything about Almirola, but this is one of those things that you pointed out several weeks ago. What are we going to do about the drivers that are out of contention for, you know, a playoff spot or for the championship? This is where you have to go, and seriously, you have to be, sort of speaking in a biblical sense, be kind to your brother while you're out there on the track, because you never know what kind of hell you're going to be able to draw back when the next race comes up. And I think Kyle Busch is finding that out right now, that there's a lot of people that's marked for him coming down to the very end of this season, and he's done some things to some people. I mean, hey, Bubba Wallace spun him around at Watkins Glen here this past year. I don't see Bubba doing that, but you've got some other drivers that have got probably some grudges somewhere along the line, and if they have a chance to knock Kyle Busch out of the fray, so be it. That's what they're going to do at this point. They're looking for somebody other than Kyle Busch that's going to make it into this fray. And I know these guys get along while they're, you know, they're off, you know, similar in different situations, promotional things and so forth. But it kind of reminds me of the Rusty Wallace, Dale Earnhardt spat that they had in 95, that they had teamed up to go against Jeff Gordon. And then Earnhardt goes and spins Rusty Wallace around at Bristol, and Rusty ends up at the end of the race throwing a water bottle and hitting Dale Earnhardt in the face. That's the kind of racing that we're starting to see again now. Whether or not the fans jump on it, that remains to be seen.
I would ask you this. This is a good topic, especially right now. So we had two factors in Martinsville. Short track, you know, so a lot tighter driving as a result on the short track. And also it's a playoff race. Are those two factors themselves why we're seeing, you know, I mean, okay, maybe it's rare for there to be two big fracases like this or whatever you want to call it. But are those two factors the precipitating factors there? I mean, if this is – you know, if this is April, I mean, there's probably still the factor of the short track, but, you know, short track and playoff, there's a lot more tension, I guess, now than there would be in an early season race.
Yeah, that's a great point because, I mean, we were talking earlier, some people and I were talking about this thing of here you've got the playoff picture now, and everything is such a cutthroat sort of way of trying to get to that final four spots, or at least getting to that Homestead winner's circle and taking that whole championship. This is the situation. In April, everybody is kind of getting the feel for everything. They're going through the tracks for the first time. Some of them will have changed. Some of them will not have changed. But they're all out there, and they're all kind of racing. But when that cutoff point starts, especially around Richmond, somewhere around in there, after Darlington and Richmond, that's when things start getting really dicey. And then the closer you start getting down to October, and then you start getting into November, it's either you've either got your game on and you're ready to go, or it's all over with. And so that's where we're standing right now with these guys. You know, you've got this situation of where you don't know who your best friend is going to be out there. There's no team members. You know, you've got Denny Hamlin out there. You've also got Kyle Busch. What happens in the situation when you have those two drivers, even though Denny Hamlin, he may very well be in contention to make one of the second spot coming up. He's done well at Texas before. He could very well seal up a spot. And then Kyle Busch trying to race into Homestead, those two, even though they're teammates, become enemies. Now, they don't get along that great when they're out on the track, because when you hear the radio transmission, they will call each other just about every name in the book. I mean, they will refer to somebody being a total idiot, but then they'll get along fine after they're away from the racetrack there for a little while. It's down to the nitty-gritty. We're getting down to it, and you just don't know who your best friend is at this point.
That's a great point. You know, yeah, it's when you're on the track, it's, you know, when you're on the playing field, whatever sport you might be in, these guys are competitors. They didn't get to NASCAR. They didn't get to the top level of NASCAR by being nice. So, hey, let's talk about somebody who I don't think got into any kind of verbal or physical or any kind of altercations with anybody, maybe just with his own car, Chase Elliott, losing his engine, 36th in the race. And we're getting ready to talk about Texas, and maybe we can start talking now. Chase Elliott, you made the point when we were trading emails, this is pretty much a must-win for him now, Texas is.
Yeah, it's win to get in for him. And his team has had this thing of an up race of maybe winning a Watkins Glen, and the bottom falls out the next week, or at least for 2 weeks, and then they come back up and they get back into the top 10 again, or the top 5, or they win a race. And for him, the pressure is on his team right now. Now, where does that put everybody else? Well, you know, William Byron, you've got some of these drivers already that are eliminated. So what does Hendrick do? Hendrick is going to start probably taking the best elements that he can, or at least the telemetry and the information that they've had from Texas before, and try to set up the perfect car. But you've got a problem here when you get in the situation of what Elliott has got into, and that is you've had engine failure, you've had a rear end failure, you had an engine failure in practice. It says something about the team, either they just don't have all their ducks in a row right now with this whole situation. Or, you know, they may just be a pretender before it's all said and done. You know, Chase Elliott has to win this week, and he has to show a dominance to get in, at least to jump into one of those other positions. And, you know, we're going to have it all decided by the time that they get to Phoenix. Phoenix will finally decide at least another spot or two out of that. But we'll finally see who's going to materialize in that four. We already know that Martin Truex is one of them. Elliott has a chance to at least solidify a spot if he can get a win at Texas this weekend. But, you know, I don't know. The odds are right now they could come up and really have a high point at a great race this weekend. But Texas is a very tough track to win on. I mean, even though people will say it looks like a Charlotte or it looks like an Atlanta, yes, it does, but Texas has a completely different feel to it as opposed to those other tracks, and that makes it a little bit more complicated in Chase Elliott trying to pick up that big win he needs this week.
He's in eighth right now, as we're getting closer to knocking it down to four. Kyle Larson, seventh. Ryan Blaney, sixth. Kevin Harvick is in fifth. Right now, on the good side of the cut line, Joey Logano in fourth, Kyle Busch third, Denny Hamlin second, Truex Jr. is in first. So set the stage there for where we are as far as the playoff standings go. We've talked a little bit about Texas. So tell us, Rod, what you think we should be looking for this weekend.
Again, probably some all-out racing. There'll be some beating and banging on some things. But we also are going to have to watch out, I think, for some, I don't know, you know, these questionable sort of things or at least questionable decisions that have been made. You know, I'm going to say this, and this is going to kind of depart over into football and some other things. You know, there's been a rash of these, players that have gone down and faked injuries, so to speak, in order to slow down the clock this year. And some of the coaches have not been very happy about it because they have supposedly faked some injuries. I've heard that out of the SEC this year. I don't know as much of the ACC reporting stuff like that, but some of the coaches have been mad about it. I heard this right before we were to sit down and record this afternoon. Dale Jarrett made an assessment on Joey Logano. Now, this is another bit of controversy about Joey Logano, that he purposely spun out and preserved at least where he's standing at. I think you read it off. He's somewhere in fourth, I believe, is where he's at, fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
So he preserved that. If he had not spun out and continued through the race there at the end of it and was managed to stay on that lead lap or something of that sort, he would have ended up falling further behind and probably falling behind down as far as Chase Elliott. And then he would have to win to get into this situation. Dale Jarrett has made a very strong charge against Joey Logano, saying it's sort of like that thing, you get a caution, you throw a water bottle out of the car just to get a caution and get yourself back up on the lead lap. So we don't know yet at this point. That's going to be something NASCAR is going to have to look at, and they're going to have to watch for it this weekend at Texas. But when you go to Texas, again, I call it the cookie cutter track. It's very similar to Charlotte, very similar to Atlanta. But this track is a little bit different, and the banking, the surface, they're all just a little bit different than one another. And when they go to Texas, I know they've had some races before. Jimmy Johnson has dominated there before. It took Jeff Gordon a long time to finally pick up a win at Texas, and he was probably a much better driver on the mile-and-a-half tracks like Atlanta and Charlotte, as opposed to Jimmy Johnson. It's what the driver is used to. Now, for Kevin Harvick, he's going to probably feel very comfortable at this track because he likes it Atlanta, and he's also liked Texas very well. So we're going to have to see where Kevin Harvick is going to fit into this mix. But also, again, you've got Chase Elliott, who has to win to get in to be able to qualify and get that second spot there out of the four spots that are remaining for the chase for the championship. And you don't know really who's going to throw a proverbial monkey wrench into the whole affair before it's over with. But you again have Eric Almirola that's out there who says he's going to go and he's going to dish it out on Kyle Busch once again. We've got some others out there. Kurt Busch could be also running a little bit of interference. We haven't talked about Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson is looking for something also to kind of keep his hopes in there as well. So it's anybody's guess who's going to win this race, but I'll tell you, it's going to be a hard-fought race, definitely right down to the very end of Texas.
I've been saying this since we started doing this podcast a while ago, Rod. When the playoffs first started a few years ago, the whole concept, I wasn't so sure I was going to like it, but it's definitely added excitement. So it's working. It's you can see it on the track. It adds intrigue, and this is good. Well, Rod, thank you for breaking this down for us. We look forward to having you back on next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.